Don't Know Why by Pilots. You're listening to Sin 90.7. This is In Joke with Hayden and Ben. Just before, you heard a couple of parts of an interview with Adam Rosenbach that we did earlier in the year, and right now you're about to hear Richard Stubbs live in a phone. Let's jump straight into it.
Let's get him
on. Richard, hello.
Hey, guys.
Hello.
Hey, how are you?
Hey, Ben. Hey, Hayden. Really good, actually. I've had a stressful day, but it's all come out perfectly right now. So that's perfect, isn't it?
Wonderful. Perfect. Perfect timing. Just ready for the interview.
Yeah.
In terms of the gala for Gilbo, how was it?
It was a really great event. I suppose it was always going to be. It sold out incredibly quickly, like in an hour or two or something like that. So the Palais, which is where the gala was, holds about 2,600. So that's a big crowd to perform to, and that's good. But they're all there, especially on a Sunday, and they're a great audience. Those kind of crowds are a great audience. They're really warm, and they're into it, and they just want you to tell them something that's funny, and they'll do the rest. And so it was really interesting for me because I've been doing quite a few gigs, one or two a week, I guess, for 6-8 weeks, something like that. Just getting back into doing stand-up in clubs and bars and all around that kind of thing. I've kept on doing corporate work all over, but I haven't done that for a long time.
Mm.
And so the other factor for me walking on stage was I had 20 comedians who are all awesome. They weren't exactly standing with their arms folded, but they were reasonably enough all looking to see, so is this awkward or can you do this? That was fun.
So how was it to be on the lineup of so many legendary comedians?
Yeah, good. I know all of them, and they're great and all of that. Happy to be a part of all of that, no problem. And there's some great comedy. Oh, Judith Lucy, funny. If you've never seen Judith Lucy do stand up, kind of need to see that. I mean, I don't need to tell you that Hughie's good and Will Anderson's good, but Judith Lucy's wonderful. Yeah, there, I mean, lots of other great ones there too.
Right. How did you go about sort of choosing your material for an event like this?
Yeah, it's interesting because here are the parameters. You're doing 6 minutes because obviously it's going to blow out. So that's a slight challenge for me because I tend to tell stories rather than sort of boom tish. But I've only got 6 minutes to tell stories. I remember once I was doing a gig in London, and I was doing it for a TV show in London, and it was Jules Holland, that's what it was. And I'm with this other comedian who's doing it too, this British comedian, and the producers come up and said, all right, we're running late, the show's running late, so your segment's going to have to go from 6 minutes to 3 minutes.
Wow. Mm-hmm.
And he went, what? I've got it set for 6 minutes, and the producers looked at him and just do the funny stuff.
Wow.
And he said, actually, my whole career's kind of been working towards just doing funny stuff. So you kind of set yourself, the time will dictate the material a bit. Unless you're going to do kind of just random jokes, then you've got to build a narrative in that 6 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
So then, which is kind of what I'm going to do. So then I'm thinking, okay, so what is the narrative? What am I going to be talking about? And then how do I get into the, just do the good ones? How do I just do the funny bits within that narrative? You've got another issue too, and we're getting into the nuts and bolts of it, but that's okay. That's what this show's for, right?
So exactly.
The size of the audience means your material and your timing change.
Yeah.
So when you do really big rooms, and I've done, really big rooms like that and bigger and all that kind of stuff, everything's on delay. What you find is if you speak quickly, then other groups sort of laugh at the first thing. Mm-hmm. That smothers the sound of the next thing you said. So then other groups don't hear the setup, or they didn't hear the text, so they don't laugh, but then others do, and suddenly it's all disjointed and people aren't hearing it. You've actually got to drop the line, pause, still sell it with your body and with energy to allow it to kind of roll all the way up the back. And the other critical thing, and I guess if I was giving notes, which I'm never going to do, but if I was critical of other comedians, I would have said to them that generally people weren't playing up enough. So if you play a venue that is split level, your eye line should be to a person who's sitting in the back row at the top level.
Right.
Like that's your basic eye line. Don't look down. Don't look to the back of the lower level. Always look up. If you don't look up and then section the audience looking up, you break eye contact. It's really easy for the top level of any venue to feel disconnected. And so you're losing kind of half your audience straight away. You right. need to connect those. The people in the front will get it anyway. It's the people up the back. You've got to drag them in, and you do that with eye line. You've got to play big venues up and slower. Even though you're nervous, even though it's 2,600 people and all of that stuff, you've actually got to be slower, not faster. So it requires a bit of discipline. Sorry, long answer.
But no, that's perfect.
Please, yeah, less time for us to talk. So do you actually go in and sort of think your comedy through as much as that? Do you break it down mechanically for each gig, or did you sort of especially do it for the Gala for Gilbert?
No, I kind of think about every gig and think about what I'm going to do because I don't have a set script as such. As I create bits and I generally, like at that Gala for Gilbo, I did stuff that I'd never done before. No one had ever heard it. It had never been heard outside of my head. So, look, you could argue, Richard, is that the time to drop new material? But that's kind of how I roll. So I'll create material when I'm doing stand-up, and I'll have ideas that I'll back myself and be able to put into the narrative and put into words and stuff. So, I'll be thinking a lot about the nature of the gig, what I'm going to do, which bits, what's appropriate, how we're going to do it. I'll do that. And then I'll think about it. I'll have a shower before I head out. I think everyone's got a routine of some sort. I have a shower, and in the shower, because it's kind of white noise, I think about everything that can go wrong, and I work through it. I see myself, okay, if that happens, I'm going to do this. That happens, I'm going to do that. And I can see the pattern, and I can see my set, and I'm feeling it. And I can think where that new idea, I'm thinking about those bits, where they're going to slot in, and how I'll probably use that. And then I'm good to go, and then I can just step on stage and do whatever, and I'm bulletproof then. So, yeah.
Yeah, wow. So what is it sort of specifically that you really like about stand-up?
Yeah, good question, because I'm getting back into it, right? Having done corporate work for a long time and radio for a long time, back into doing, you know, like I said, sort of bars and clubs, basically saying yes to everything. That's great. So what do I like about it? Nothing is quite like the adrenaline rush of stand-up that is working. Mm-hmm. Particularly, I think, if you work the way I do, where you're kind of making stuff up.
Yeah.
So that's a little bit different to having a 15-minute set and you're saying that set word for word that you would say the night before, but it didn't work, but tonight it is, and that's great. I see myself as a safe cracker. So the audience are the combination. I've got a couple of minutes on stage at the start to work out what's going on with this audience, crack them, how can I get them? And then once I do that, I'm going to tailor all the stuff I'm doing to what I think it is, and so I'll be saying something, but my mind will be a couple of sentences ahead, editing, changing, making stuff up, reworking tags, doing stuff, and then my mouth is just kind of saying the words that I've already laid out as I'm... It's like building railway track in front of the train. So... So that's really exhilarating. Sorry, long answer.
No, that's exactly the type of answer that we're after on this show.
But it's exhilarating to come off stage, and I don't care if it's 15 minutes in a comedy club that's free to get in, and I'm just on the bill. Mm-hmm. I don't care if I'm headlining somewhere and I'm doing half an hour, 40 minutes. I don't care if it's a 6-minute big feature gig. I kind of treat every gig as if it's my first and as if it'll be my last.
Right.
And so I, Yeah, I treat them all equally. They all, I want to smash them all, basically. Yeah.
Well, Richard, we're going to get right back into the interview. We're going to cut to a song, essentially, and then we're going to get right back into the interview with you. So if you've just tuned in, we're talking to Richard Stubbs at the moment. This is In Joke here on Sin 90.7. We're about to cut to a song, but we'll be right back after the song with the second part of the interview with Richard Stubbs. 90.7, this is In Joke with Hayden and Ben. And just before the song, we were talking to Richard Stubbs, who I'm guessing needs no introduction. But if he does, he's obviously a radio presenter, comedian, who's been working for over 30 years in the industry. So we're joined again by Richard Stubbs in the second part of this interview. So, Richard, great to have you back.
Thanks. I was toe-tapping there.
Excellent.
We could hear it.
Yeah. Well, I love the nightlife. I love the comedy.
Yes. So what made you first want to get into comedy?
So I didn't. I was working. It sounds like a B grade movie, this, but I swear this is true. I was working at the Last Laugh, and I was working there as a barman and waiter because I'd got myself through uni working in bottle shops and bars, basically, and I couldn't face that anymore. But I needed more money, so I got this other job, working at the Last Laugh, where it was a bit more fun than just a bar. Mm. And they used to do tryout nights, and one night there were no acts, there were no one trying out, and the compere said, get the loudmouth barman up, and so I got pushed up on stage for the rest of the staff and mucked around and thought, oh, this is great, and I came back the next night and did it again and again and kind of kept rolling. Henry Mars was the compere, who still, you know, does cool things around the place. So there you go.
And radio, how did you then get into that?
So I was doing stand-up, and that was going well. I was headlining in a show downstairs at the Last Laugh, and that was with Wendy Harmer and a whole lot of other people. And I got approached by the radio station, then 3XY. They were an AM rock station, and FM was making its big move. That's how far back we're going. And they needed something different. There was a format that was based out of New York with a radio station called Z100, and it was the Z Morning Zoo. And it was kind of a format, and they thought they'd like to try that. So they got me into trial, and I got the job from that. Mm-hmm. Shirley Strawn from Skyhooks tried for that as well, but I beat him because, as I pointed out to him often, I was better. And he went on to work for XY and then later Triple M as well, of course. And so I got the job. That turned into the XY Zoo, which was, I'm really embarrassed to say, the first of what you think of as normal breakfast radio. You know, there's a, there's like a, although now, because it's reality host, but it used to be, you know, stand-up comedians with a radio person and hijinks aplenty. That was kind of, that was my fault. I started that. Well, I was the first one to do it, and then it took off.
And so do you think that radio is a really good vehicle for comedy?
Yeah, and yeah, it is. I think what everyone has to remember is that radio, television, and I think podcasts are slightly different again, and live are all about comedy, sure, but they're all their own disciplines. Mm-hmm. So they have their own skills, they have their own strengths and their own weaknesses. Radio's got lots of things that are going for it, but it's a different medium, so you can't just do your stand-up on radio. You've got to learn the skills of radio to get the message across. Is it good for comedy? Yeah, sure. Because radio's about a personal connection. So radio exists still in this world of digital and select everything and create my own because it's personal, because I create a relationship with my listener, and therefore they're involved, they're invested. And radio is often used by people when they're on their own. You know, yes. We're in the car or we're at home or at work or something, and we're just on our own. And so the voice and I, we kind of connect. And that means, comedy will work in that. But you've got to establish that connection first. Otherwise, they're kind of driving past some people inside a shop who are being smart asses. it's not quite the same connection. You know, you've got to have connection with your audience and then take them with you in the comedy, I think.
So did you find when you were first starting out on radio that sort of lack of instant feedback that you get when you're doing stand-up, did you find that a bit challenging at first?
Yeah, that's that was disconcerting. Luckily for me, I was in a group. So that kind of we fed off each other. It was really tricky when I then went on to Triple M because I went from doing breakfast to doing mornings. The DGen were doing breakfast on Triple M and I was doing 9 to 12. Suddenly, I was just completely on my own. So completely on my own, and I'm like, this is hard. And then when I changed again to the ABC, when I went on 774, I suddenly was on my own and there were no songs. It's like, oh, this is a lot of talking. So I guess the answer to your question, it's a good question, is that everything you do will have its challenges, and I think the mistake is to think, oh, this won't be different or challenging. Yeah, it's going to be. So therefore, you want to be up for that. You want to be able to go, yep, it's all right to make mistakes. Like when I started at Triple M, I got out, I did something unusual, I guess. I learnt to panel because I was the only one on the show, so I learnt to panel. Yet in doing so, I reckon I took the station off air completely four times in the first 3 months, like completely, like the logger tapes, the tapes that kick in, the music tapes, if they think the station's been nuked, they kicked in.
Like, we're just
off air.
Yeah, well, I mean, here at Sin, we kind of encourage that as well. Not so much taking ourselves off air, but, you know, the kind of teaching presenters to panel and making sure we're all aware of, you know, it's not too bad if you press the wrong button.
Yeah, well, I think you should, because it's great to... I've always found it's great to panel because only I... Because I'm making stuff up, only I will really be able to feel that. Is that the out cue? Yeah, maybe it is. Yeah. Maybe it's different to the out cue I thought it was going to be. But this has happened naturally, so we need to get out now. That kind of stuff. I've always felt it helps the timing if I'm driving the buttons.
Yeah, right. What are some of your favourite memories just on radio?
I think those XYZ days were great because we were anarchic and... we were desperately trying to be different, so we were allowed to be terribly naughty, and that was fun. Triple M breakfast that I went on and did after I'd done Triple M mornings. Triple M breakfast, that was a fantastic time. Out of a bad time, like the original team all quit in a huff, and we just put the show on with people who wanted to do it. And that was Bridget Duclos and Eddie McGuire and Tim Smith and Brad McKenzie, who's a writer and a character as well, and that just clicked. And to be in a team that is getting on well, is funny on air, and also seeing results in the ratings, that's just great. That was a great experience. And a decade or so at the ABC, the highs were all different again. That was a different kind of broadcasting. There were great comedy moments, but there was also, I did live broadcasts from the last two dawn service at Gallipoli, the centenary and the one before that, and we did broadcasts during Black Saturday and outside broadcasts in the week in the aftermath of Black Saturday, and they were really powerful and really interesting as well, and lots of great comedy, you know, people drifting in along the way. You know, some comedians are just awful to talk to and others are hilarious. Billy Connolly and Robin Williams, not surprisingly, we're both hilarious, and so it's been good. I've had great times and sometimes some awful guests. So.
Yeah. So, in a sense, what? Because I mean, we're all comedians here, and it's sort of something I know I've been struggling with. But what do you think is the purpose of comedy, or what do you hope to get out of doing comedy?
Oh, absolutely, I know what that is. clearly, I don't. But look, I think about everything, so I've thought about this. Purpose of comedy is to take the load off people. It's to entertain. And I think critically, you've got to be funny first. Before any message, anything you want to get across, as well as that, ask yourself, are you funny?
Yeah.
Like, mate, put some jokes in there. your job, I think, my job, I'll speak for me, my job is to make people feel happy. And that's an enormously profound thing. Whether it's on radio or whether it's live, people could have been having the worst day. They could have just been crying all day. I had people who it were in all sorts of bother just tuning in to hang on, to have their day lightened a bit, to stop feeling whatever they're feeling, to stop being so sad or worrying about the thing they're worrying, to have a circuit breaker from that. That's hugely powerful. That's not a light or trivial thing. That's a really good thing. If you can uplift people, if they walk out having seen you feeling better than they went in, that's awesome. That's a good job. I'm happy with that job. Yeah. And I always treat it that way too. I always think, if, you know, people have punted their Saturday night on you as a stand-up comedian or whatever night it is, they've really taken the risk that you're not going to suck and that you're going to make them feel better and it's going to be okay, and everyone will go, good choice, Ben. That was great to go out and see that stand-up. Good on you. Yeah. Well, it was Hayden's idea. Oh, good on Hayden. You know, they want that. So I have that always in my mind, that I'm going to deliver to any audience, anywhere, corporate, club, bar, doesn't matter, and I'm going to make them feel better. And, yeah, that's what it is.
Yeah.
Do you ever read Thomas Covenant?
No.
Okay. I won't quote then from the White Gold Wielder because that'd be weird.
You could quote and then we'll look it up later.
No, it's okay. It lacks the whole oomph thing, you know.
Well, I suppose that's a great place to wrap it up. Thank you immensely.
Yeah, if I could just give you some radio advice.
Yes, please.
Mm-hmm. Critical radio advice. So we've talked about being personal.
Yes.
The other two bits I'd say to you, if you ever get a guest who's not into it, use your sense of your stand-up to be immediate about it. If you can hear it, the audience can hear it. So say to them, you're not into this. What's going on? Like, deal with whatever happens in the moment. Deal with it and talk it through. And the other most critical thing, if I can give you what I try to go with always, never ask permission. It's much easier to apologise than it is to ask for permission.
Right.
So I always go, oh, really? Are we not supposed to do that? Oh, I'm so sorry. As opposed to, do you mind if we do something? Yeah, that doesn't sound good. Oh, all right. So, yeah, just do it and then apologise.
How do you think we've got this far?
Yeah, that's right. Going, really? Oh, I'm sorry. That's bad.
So we could talk to you. We could talk to you for about everything forever, Richard. Thank you so much for joining us on Sin 90.7 FM. Just remind us quickly, have you got any more gigs coming up? I believe you're doing one at Dave O'Neill's again soon.
Yeah, this Wednesday. So if you're in the area, come around. I'll see you guys working around the traps, which I'll look forward to. And, yeah, this Wednesday, and then I'm gigging pretty much every week. So
wonderful.
In clubs and bars and parking lots. And
wonderful. Well, I don't know if we can talk about those on air. But thank you very much, Richard, for joining us on In Joke.
Thank you
very much. Yeah, it's been a great chat. So we're going to come...